What should we look at this evening? All right. Good night. See you in the morning. Fanny.
I just wanted to say that I always love what I call these census workshop experiences, you know, where there's little teams of people working all over, and we got whatever you're doing, you know you're part of this big action.
Yeah.
It's just a great feeling.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great look, too. Yeah.
Oh, man.
What's going on out there.
Yeah.
Lots of fun things. So I've asked everybody who I've run into, and most of you today, actually, have you been down to the creek? You're in for a thrill. Let me tell you. It's not a total thrill yet, right? But it's close to being, very close to being a total thrill. And I said, you know, some people that said they didn't know there was a road. Scott said, I didn't know there was a road here. All right, there's a road here. Very exciting. I come down the drive, though. I just told my friends I rode down with it. Now all poison oak looks like something. I can just feel my clippers going in, right? Throw it over the edge. Rebecca.
Well, that is very exciting, and it kind of touches on something I've been looking at, because I've had this this real desire to be on the road crew.
Well, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want to be on the road crew? It's where the action is.
It sounds really fun.
Mosquitoes, poison oak. It's a thrill in it.
Do you know when your clothes have to be specially laundered after that?
Man, I didn't get any takers. Did you put the laundry out, or you all decided the second day, not a problem?
Well, I didn't go around asking for it, so they might not have known it was an option.
Oh, they did. Yeah, okay. We talked about it in the truck. We talk about a lot of things in the truck. That's another reason to want to be on the road crew.
God, now I really do. It's like that's the club. So that sort of touches what I've been looking at, and that is, because there's a way to say, oh, please put me on the road crew. That would not be exactly the
monastic,
Santa's work, monastic, or even the Santa's workshop kind of mentality. But there is a way to say, you know, if it's all the same, then I would enjoy that. You know, that does feel like that would be a perfectly fine kind of grown-up thing to do, even. Mm-hmm. And that gets me.
Scott was going to chainsaw today, and we never ran into a single thing that needed to be chainsawed.
You mean there's an opportunity to learn to chainsaw, too?
Yeah.
That really sounds fun.
Yeah.
But do you see what I'm kind of pointing at? It's like, how do you, you know, to, because there are things like that periodically that, oh, I would enjoy that. But because then on, so there's that duality of, on that side of kind of asking inappropriately for what is life's to give.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then there's.
I'd like to have ice cream.
Yeah. Or even. A bit, kind of, yeah, it's that. But even something that's totally within, like, you know, could I get a ha-ha around my heritage? And, you know, that would be kind of, you know, just sort of that. But then the other side is sort of like, well, if I'm a really good little girl, you know, Santa will bring that for me for Christmas, you know. Mm-hmm. And finding the middle way in that is sort of what I've been looking at.
Yeah. Well, there's no harm in putting it out there, is there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's where, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing
my,
the answer is.
My question
yes.
was a clue, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yes or no. And, you know, and, but yet, there, it does.
So Scott said, you know, I haven't had a chance to chainsaw, so if there's any chainsawing, I'd love to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, unfortunately, we didn't run into anything, any chainsawing. But now I know that.
Mm-hmm.
He'd like to be proficient with chainsaw. So great. You'd like to chainsaw. You'd like to weed eat. Yeah. You'd like to, well, you're already weedy.
I'm a good
weedy. Yeah. Yeah. So, it, you know, to put it on the, you know, I mean, one of the big rants I get into here periodically is, I mean, we built this place, right? We built every square inch of this. And by we, I mean all of the people who, you know, Tom, you know, did every door and window in the place, cut the glass, milled the redwood. You know, we tamped the dirt in for the walls, you know, and then somehow we got to the point where people can't screw in a light bulb. You know, we need Josh to, and again, if anybody who's read our new cookbook, the revised version of the cookbook, the story, Sister Phil has it in the back of that, is classic. I mean, it says everything,
yeah.
Right? In that mash tent with the water thing and the propane thing, and when one of them broke, she was the cook, so she could just go out, change the propane tank and put a new thing of water up, and because she plumbed it all, right?
Yeah.
So she knew exactly how all of it worked. And so, yeah, you want to learn to do, I'd love to teach you to do that stuff.
Yeah.
We need somebody to do that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So we have a faucet that's broken. We need people who can fix a faucet.
Yeah.
Not, is Josh coming in this week? Because if not, geez, we're down to three faucets.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I mean, it's all about taking responsibility for life.
Yeah, and a lot, and the dash of curiosity.
Like, yes.
How the heck does that work? You know, I remember you saying something to me one time about the Polycom wasn't working, and you used this phrase. It's like, you know, there are those for whom this is not a mystery, you know, of how to get it to work. And it's like,
you could
be one of those.
Yeah. Why? I'm intelligent.
Yeah. I could probably learn how to splice those wires together, you know, or whatever. But, you know, so it's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can tell I'm supportive.
I can. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Janet.
That's great, because I was looking at communication and I had posted something that I wouldn't have posted otherwise, looking, you know, just to express some communication. And I just saw conditioning sort of saying, well, you can't do that. And so it was that inquiry, like saying, why not?
Yeah.
And I heard...
Yeah, so somebody writes back on the bottom of your note, don't ever do that again. They're not going to do that, right? I mean, that's what people are afraid of. Get out of here now. Don't even pack. We'll pack your things and send them to you.
So I have a question. So I'll just put it out there. I thought I heard, because I didn't hear this week's radio show Tuesday night, because we were here, but the week before, I thought I heard that the Mountain View Center was going to be open, and I thought I heard that it was going to be open soon. And I don't know why I had a little date in my mind that I thought I heard, but I guess I have no way of verifying it. And then I was thinking, I'm going home soon. Yeah, I'm going home soon. I wonder if it's really soon and I could change flights and be there.
Well, it's not really soon.
Oh.
On Sunday, some people who live in the area have been invited to just come and see where it is. That's it. We have the floor down. So that's kind of the extent of how ready we are, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Because when we got it, it had carpet in it that makes this look really good. Okay. And... So because yoga is going to be a big part of what happens there, we decided to ask, just go right out there and ask for what we wanted. And so the new bamboo floor went in. It's very beautiful. So on Sunday, we'll go down in the afternoon, and basically local people will come and just see where it is and kind of talk about the vision for it and you know, all like that there. And then it'll be after that, I think the next date is like the 18th or the 19th or something like that.
We would know more on the 4th.
Yeah, yeah. And so then it's really going to be those carpentry skills, right, are going to come into play of putting the place together. And then toward the end of June, we'll start having things there. And then our vision is kind of for the month of July, pretty much the maybe the second week in July, something like that. We want to spend a month just having all kinds of programs there that will be a sampling of the kinds of things that we'll be doing going forward, and invite everybody and have them invite everybody, and just kind of a here we are. So that's what that is.
Well, it sounds exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm incredibly excited.
I've never been to Mountain Views. I've never been to Mountain Views.
Oh, so well.
You know, I have no idea, but it sounds big.
Yeah, well, it's just a town like any other town. It's kind of a run-on town. You leave San Francisco, and then you get to Santa Cruz, and you've never left downtown. So, but it's a nice town. It's a very nice town. It just happens to be the one where we started, and I've been there for, you know, 113 years, and so I just have always wanted to have another center of our own there. So we've, you know, we've always had city groups there, but not a home. And now we feel like we have a home. And we've been really blessed that this guy. So Ashwini was telling me she talked with somebody she worked with years ago and told him about the center. And she said, it's on the Mountain View Palo Alto border. He knew exactly where it was. Mm-hmm. And my question was, well, how did he know where it is? And it's because the zoning in that area, because it's the home of Google and the home of Apple and the home of every other of those kinds of industries, the prices of everything have just gone berserk. And everything is being taken out to put in housing. Mm-hmm. And the thing that is the blessing for Mountain View is they'll tear everything else down. But Mountain View is the restaurant for the peninsula. And so that's sacrosanct. But everything else is going to this housing. So except this one little section between Mountain View and Palo Alto where you can still have commercial activities. And we met this incredibly charming Indian chap who is convinced that we are the future of his karma. Oh. And I mean, he wants us there so much that, I mean, he was willing to put bamboo floors in, take the carpet out, put bamboo floors in for us. So he's so happy that there's going to be meditation and yoga in his building. He's very sweet, very charming. So we've just been, you know, it's the, you know, the, it's all just opening out in front of us every step of the way. So I feel really excited and blessed.
Yeah. Along those lines, with the questionnaire that had gone out about the monastery, it sure sounds like things are picking up here just from what I'm hearing, but has there been any kind of decision on what way the monastery is going to be going?
No. We know nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, if I'm sure we've talked about this, but if it hadn't been for this last winter, we wouldn't have had a choice. Because there was just no water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we were growing marijuana now, we could get the big trucks and truck in the water. But since we're not, then, you know, it kind of really put us out, would have put us out of business. But because we raced out, yes, Penny, you know, figured out how many tanks we need for the water, and we were convinced, of course, we were in a drought, still we're in a drought year, right? So you can see, we've got these giant tanks all over the property full of water, right? We got them in the first 2 weeks, right? The first two rains, and then it rained, and rained, and rained, and rained. So, you know, now, of course, we're in really good shape. So we'll just see if people do want to continue to come and then like that. I mean, we have 320 incredibly beautiful acres that are paid for. And have been paid for years. So it's not, you know, it's, it'd be hard to make a decision to let it go. But of course, if people don't want it, then because it costs a lot of money to keep it up. And so, you know, as long as people want it, we're happy to do it. And it does seem that more people, it's, you know, people talked about that. People said, oh, it never occurred to me to go. You know, I went on retreat in North Carolina, or I go on retreat in Pennsylvania, so it never occurred to me to go. Oh, I could go to the monastery. And so I think part of it is just having an increased awareness that it's here, and it would be nice for people to take advantage of it. Ashwini?
Well, and just to add to that, the wonder, it raised the awareness that the monastery is a place where people could come and it's the home of spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And no one said they weren't coming for any reason that wasn't reasonable.
Right. I have kids. I can't get off work and take the time for that. I can't afford to be off work and take the time. I have family big obligations that if I do that, then they, yeah.
And to me, the wonderful thing that is happening is this retreat, mm-hmm. and the retreat, the spring retreat, mm-hmm. where part of the reason to ask the question was, it's not just something that exists in California that's a nice place to think about as the home of practice, because if you're not here, if you're not participating in its upkeep, it's impossible to keep it up. And so it's just wonderful to have people who are here for the retreats that assist in maintaining the property, and as a gesture of this is my home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's thousands and thousands of people who consider this the center of their spiritual practice, but some of them have never been here, and yet. That's what it means to them. So, yeah.
This is my first time to a retreat work.
Bless you.
Bless you. A work. Mm-hmm. What is it called? Retreat. And it's wonderful.
Oh, good.
There are the multiple sits and the time. Mm-hmm. And I like the physical work. Mm-hmm. So it's charming and wonderful. I really like it the best of any retreat I've been on. So I'll be back.
Well, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah, that's very good to hear.
Now, in that tiny little rain we got during this summer retreat, we got about 400 gallons of water.
And you captured them?
We got, so the chubby was set up, so that one was all set. And the other two downspouts, I just took the spouts out and put trash cans under them.
Aha.
Uh-huh. I forgot about that one. It's so fun.
That's amazing.
I mean, this roof is outrageous.
Yeah.
For water catchment.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're set. Yeah.
Hey, the 20,000 gallons we figured out we could capture did not include this roof.
Oh. Right.
There's all other buildings you're talking about. Yeah. So we could capture easily 80,000 gallons.
Uh-huh. We could sell the water.
Marijuana
growers! Finally, we have a cottage industry.
Christina. Well, I just want to say that it is a great privilege to work here. I knew when I was coming that I would be caring for this beautiful property that means so much to me. And I just wish everyone could do it, because it is, I mean, it's it's not just the people. You all are great too, but to be here and to interact with the land and to know that it's here. I mean, I can't. I get emotional anyway about lots of things, but I can't help but just be overcome by that, because it's. I feel like people get to care for it. And when I was out there working today, I was thinking, how can I get my partner here? He would love to be out here working and caring for this land. Mm-hmm. And how can I want to just get a whole truckload. Because you can see how much work there is to do.
Yeah.
and also just because it, you know, I'm over there cutting things and watching all this life below me. And it's that place of, I've got to cut this road, and I know I'm cutting through life, life that's trying to grow, and this like gorgeous flower comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's white, and it's got these crazy purple things inside, little splashes of purple, and tiny little seedlings, and I mean, all in one little flower out of nowhere. Am I going on and on?
No, it's fine. These people are going on. Sherry's wacko on the subject of Mariposa lilies.
Oh, so, is that what that was?
Yeah. So, in fact, around my place, I won't weed eat it until the Mariposa lilies are finished blooming.
Yeah.
And a year like this, it was late. I mean, it's, you know what the weeds are like, but
yes.
Nobody touches anything until the Mariposa lilies are finished.
Yes. I did walk around it and left it for someone else.
Right. Yeah, if somebody's going to cut it down, it's not going to be me. I left them too. So, yeah.
So, anyhow, it was a great honor, a great privilege. Yesterday, we had the chance to not do the cutting today, you know, not go and do that particular work. And I didn't even hesitate to say, of course, I will be there. And then afterward, all the noodling began of, oh, maybe they don't want you to do it because you weren't good enough, or maybe, you know, someone else should have a try, or, you know.
What about poor Rebecca?
Maybe she sent me a note, or, you know. And, and it was so great because it happened for just a second. And I was like, uh-uh, you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't ask to be there. This is what it is. I can't wait to show up and do it tomorrow. And I don't know when I'll get a chance to do it again. Mm-hmm. And thank you.
I'm right there. There's nothing like it. That's the whole, you know, once you participate in that way, it's yours. You know, you'll never, ever go to the creek the same way as you would have gone if you hadn't been on that crew.
Well, I've always been too afraid to go to the creek.
Right now it's a super highway, right? And of course, you know, these kinds of things. But let's not forget the people in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that when we get finished doing whatever it is that we're doing, we come back and we have great food to eat. So it's really everybody doing whatever is happening. I'm telling you, one of the things that, I mean, there are a lot of things around this that thrill me, but one of the greatest thrills was walking past that garden and not seeing 9 feet of weeds growing up through the, you know, and that's the kind of thing that, I mean, there are years when they just stay there, you know, because we don't have any choice. So we can either tend the vegetables and the things that are inside the garden, or we can pull the weeds and we vote for the vegetables. And so, yeah, don't you feel it? It just feels loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something, Dad, maybe this isn't true, but when we came back from North Carolina, I was talking about how upsetting it was being there in that place. It's a very beautiful place. Anybody who's been there, it's a very beautiful place. But it's people coming in and into these beautiful woods and just bulldozing to put in houses. Mm-hmm. And then while I was there in this beautiful house, that's it, true, and on this beautiful screen porch, here comes the pest control guy. Right, and here comes the spray, and you know me, you can imagine what restraint it took not to say, no, we've changed our minds this week. You can come next week if you need to, but not this week. And so as was there doing guidance on this porch, I'm watching the bugs die.
Mm-hmm.
And there are the birds. Now, so I'm sorry, some of you have heard this, but I've been going to North Carolina for, I don't know, I figured it out recently, but some 35 or 40 years or something like that. And the same part of North Carolina. And I know the difference in the bird population.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just obvious. They're just not there anymore. I mean, it's not, there are birds, but not like there used to be. And I was sitting in there today in the dining hall with these birds that are just crazed, right? I mean, they're just, you know, and this whole area, I mean, we've got a good chunk of land where nobody harms anything, right? They're all safe here. The deer are safe here. Even the bear is safe here, right? And just lives, coexists with us. And I just, it just makes me so happy that that we can do this, you know, and that it takes such good care of us, and we can take such good care of it.
I just want to say I'm willing to work the kitchen. Whatever.
Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jill.
It's so funny. I love this conversation. You know, when I first, I guess when we first did our diet, and I sound this way because I have grass, like, jammed up into my sinuses.
It's good time, huh?
It's a good time.
I said to Jill, as she's the eater, I said, "You don't have this kind of fun in the city, do you?"
I look like the abominable snowman of grass. Like, when I first got here and did my first diet, it was after my first stint on the work crew, and I was saying how, you know, I grew up like this, with chainsaws, and, you know, we had fields, and I baled the hay and did all that stuff. And I was like, you know, that's the first time that I've ever been around a chainsaw and not wished that I was the person doing the chainsawing, because I spent so many years just idolizing the person who had the chainsaw. It seemed almost like the power conch or something, you know, there was just I don't know, there was something about it that made me want to do it. Mm-hmm. And when I was on the road crew the first time, you know, there's Josh with the chainsaw, I'm like, you know what, I have no desire to do that. And it felt like a very nice release of some karma, actually, where some childhood orientation towards, you know, I want to be doing a thing that is, you know, whatever. Some ego story about it. And it was so nice to just be there with my little clippers, gently picking up the
poison oak,
moving it as if it was, which it is, contamination. But yeah, I just think that was, that was a nice, many nice moments on the work crew, but as I'm sure everywhere else.
Well, what else? What else has been going on with you besides fun and work?
I am reading the Revised Fear Book.
Oh.
And it's amazing how I'm realizing the much broader scope of what is fear. And that I somehow hadn't seen this level of it before. Which is interesting. It's just that interesting place where, you know, looking at things again and again and again, and each time I come around to them, there's something really else to see there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Can you give an example?
Yeah. Well,
those of us who haven't read it.
Basically, what it's feeling like, and sometimes I think it's just any lens we look through, it's like, oh, everything is that, or every. But it's what it feels like is there's a way in which the root of all of suffering is fear. Like, in the same way that what it seems like is
fear is desire, or desire is fear. I don't know which way you say that. But so, because what I've been watching as I go around is any suffering at the root of it is, I don't want this, or I guess it's like when there's truly the realization that there is no me, there is no I, there cannot be fear. There can't be suffering. So that the it feels like anytime there's suffering, it's because I want something.
Yes. Yes. That we could say fear is the process of experiencing oneself as separate from life.
Yeah.
That movement itself is fear.
Yeah.
So there's no possibility of being an I that isn't experiencing fear.
Right.
Because, as we're fond of saying, the only thing that was born and the only thing that's going to die is that illusion of separation.
Right.
And so as that illusion of separation, we know it's coming.
Right.
And as you say, each time I want something, I want that. If I had it, I wouldn't want it. So the very wanting,
yeah,
is the lack.
Right.
And that lack is proof, mm-hmm, that you have no control, that you are completely vulnerable, that things are never going to go your way.
Yes.
And so the suffering is hideous. Just with that movement, and you could be sitting in a recliner on the veranda, exactly, sipping a mint julep, exactly, and the suffering is just as great.
Precisely. Yes. 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 So it's this interesting...
As
yes,
Kris Kristofferson pointed out, and Janis Joplin sang so wonderfully...
Freedom.
Just another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And so as long as you want something.
Right, thank you.
As long as you want something, you're a victim.
And that's how it feels like. So there's that getting to that place of nothing left to lose. Mm-hmm. Take it all. Mm-hmm. Take it all. And it's such an incredible, joyful place of freedom. Yeah. I had an experience, I don't know, a few weeks back where just one of those things.
Can people hear all right, all the way back there? Yeah? Okay.
Just core karma triggered, just for whatever reason.
Karma nailed you.
Karma nailed you. You know, just came in. And I just had one of those moments of grace where, you know, I'm just practicing along, everything I know to do, and just... In the middle of cleanup, that's always where it happens, right? Mm-hmm. The shower or cleanup. Those are the two big places of enlightenment where it's like it just dropped away. And that was it. Like, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that can happen to me. There's nothing that, right? And so in that place...
I only want this.
Exactly. I only want this. And so it feels like what happens is on just the, I mean, some of them not so subtle, but on some very subtle, what feel like subtle now ways, just it just begins to throw things in there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, only it's like.
Yeah. Because, of course, in that profound place of nothing left to lose, take it all, it is completely joyful. It is such a beautiful place to live. And everything works. Mm-hmm. So that's then that place where, I just get this image of, like, you know, the conditioned, ugh, it's like the devil just comes along right next to you and just says the same thing and starts blending in, and then, you know, just...
Yeah, so it's those separate parallel tracks, right?
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's oozed over onto your track.
Suddenly, I want this.
Yes.
You know? So there it is.
Well, yeah, but let's break that down.
Okay.
Right? Because what happened? Mm-hmm. What happened there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's not, I want this.
Right.
So whatever we call that, which is there happily... was it just this morning? God, was this morning like days ago? Was that when Janet was talking about sitting on the porch having breakfast? I just thought that's a solid marriage. and Brad too, with losing his little doggy.
Yeah.
There's just this. Mm-hmm. So now because we don't have another language for it, we're going to say, I just want this. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. Here I am, I'm on this track, I'm on life track, I'm in this here now, this is all I want, mm-hmm. there's nothing left over, no problem. Here comes the ooze, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's not... Whatever that is that was there in this here now isn't.
Yeah. Yes.
Because the awareness that was identified there as that has been taken over.
Yeah.
There's an identification with the devil. Yeah. The devil's not a problem until I invite the devil in.
Uh-huh.
Right? So then there's no more Jen going down the track. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. There's just that will be meaningful. And that's what we're up against, right? There it's the takeover.
Yeah.
It's now, I want this. I do want that. I want that and that and that and some of those too.
Exactly.
And it's very confusing for people because a little while ago I didn't.
Right.
And what's the matter with me?
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's why we talk about this stuff the way we do all the time, right? Uh-huh. Because in most of the world, that is not understood.
Yes.
Right? So it's you. And you were there, and now you're the devil, and it's your fault, and what's the matter with you, and why don't you stop it?
Yeah, yeah.
Evil person.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of a phrase that dropped in a while back, that something like, a good definition of hell is knowing in my heart what I actually want and identifying with that which doesn't.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And happily, it's a powerful place in practice. Mm-hmm. Because it's from that view that we can choose. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So what happens up until that point is I'm either here or I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So when it takes a while in practice to even know I'm identified with the devil.
Yeah.
Evil has me, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that. Mm-hmm. I just hate everybody. And it seems clear, and if you want me to, I'll explain to you why. Okay? And why don't you see it? Right?
You must be identified with the devil.
You think something really wrong with you if you can't see how really screwed up this is. All right? And then, you pop out of it. And if somebody said, well, you know, you were going on about, and, well, yeah, I must have been, I don't know, I was kidding. You shouldn't take me seriously when I do that. So there's that, and going back and forth, so that's what we talk about all the time, right? There's the light room and there's the dark room. Mm-hmm. I'm in the light room. Well, you can't even explain to me what a dark room is.
Right.
It just, well, yeah, I sort of, and
I went there, but I won't ever again.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't really know what it feels like.
Yeah.
I don't really know the experience, right? Because that's not my experience. Then I'm in the dark room. Yeah. Don't tell me that life is ever going to be good again, because I know it's not. I now have the real scoop, right? And just back, and people just go back and forth and back. And then we get to that place that you're talking about, where I actually can see both of them. And as you say, I know in my heart what I value, and I have been taken over to the point that I cannot choose it.
Wow.
That's yeah. Now, again, that could be a, and it is kind of a moment, right? But the now you've got a direction.
Yeah.
Right? Now you know what's going on, and you know where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very helpfully laid out, because what I see in that is the courage to just stay put.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
So it feels like the two bounce-off places are have to go unconscious.
Yes.
Whatever. Distraction, whatever. Or what I talked about the other night, manage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Here we go. We need to, come on.
We need to practice with this.
You know, just, but to just stay right there. To not assume anything's wrong. To assume nothing's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to just stay right there in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're in touch with what your heart wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking with somebody about this earlier today, by the way, that's that place where, okay, I know what my heart wants. I'm not able to choose it.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the power of staying right there.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
I know both of those things are happening.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
Now, if that becomes my burning quest,
yeah,
then there's no stopping me.
And it's such a powerful way out of the survival system, whatever that might be, because I'm not going to find out how if I go into the survival. So it's like I want to let it do its thing, like, because I'm watching. So, God, do your thing.
Yeah, so I was, I don't know where I was on something, talking to somebody, probably you people, about the thing in, and I don't even know what book it's in, maybe June knows, or Ashwini knows, but the one where you go to bed at night and you wake up in the morning and the refrigerator's gone. You know that one? I don't. What?
How to get there?
The fair book.
Is it in the fair book?
I think so.
Oh,
yeah,
well. Anyway, it's such a that's exactly where we're getting with this.
Yeah.
Okay, this is happening. I know it's happening. Getting away from it happening isn't working.
Right.
Avoiding it. Pretending it's not, and all of my coping mechanisms aren't working. So I just have to stay awake until I see how these appliances keep disappearing.
Yeah, terrible.
I'm so glad that that was just brought up. It's so amazing, because in the last 2 days, those things have happened in a big way, and so...
The refrigerator?
No, not the refrigerator.
Oh.
I don't have a refrigerator here, so I'm good. Well, I'll just talk about the one today. So, after the guidance, something came over me that was just, okay, this is not going to work. Not anything that you said, particularly. But I'm just saying something happened for me, okay? And... I mean, it was such a darkness, and I just thought, okay, well, great, you know.
Now
I see that it's like, I don't even know how to say this, like now I see, and it's not good, what I see.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now I'm finally clear, this stinks.
Yeah, but it was an awful feeling. It's not like a clear feeling when the truth has dropped in. It's like something's really terribly wrong here. And it's, of course, the last thing I want to do is pick up a recorder, because I don't want to hear that sludge. But
So you knew it was sludge at that point?
Well, sludge, icky feeling, but it might have been true.
Uh-huh.
It could have been true.
So it really is what Jen is describing. So it's an icky feeling, and yet you know it's an icky feeling, and yet there's a fear that, but it could be true.
Yeah, is it okay to just tell the truth? I mean, like, I was projecting onto you, okay? I think you're big enough, you can handle that. So I was projecting something, and that's what I was doing, you know. Mm-hmm. There's these motives, blah, blah, blah. And so I recorded it, and it was so great because I usually edit myself when I record so that I won't have to hear Ricky stuff, you know. But I didn't, and that was so healing to just say, unedited, this is what I feel and think is going on. And it's really hard to listen back to that. I don't know why there's so much resistance, but there is. And it was just a process that had to go through. It wasn't going to get sped up. If I could have had alcohol here, that would have been a good thing.
I know, we should.
You know?
I think it would make the whole process
really good
easier.
Not a really good thing. I'm not a person that should be drinking alcohol, but anyway. So that's where I wanted to jump over, just like what was being said. I wanted to jump to the other side. And the little voice was saying, no, if you do that, you will not get to the other side. So you need to go through this pain and this discomfort and this awful place. If this place is so important to me and this practice is so important to me, and if it's something comes in that says it's wrong, there's something wrong, which I have been through before in kind of a cult church. So I'm just saying I have that background, you know,
mm-hmm.
and this is what was coming in. And I thought, don't think. We're not thinking. That's when I went into meditation. It's like thinking, no thinking. No, we're not doing half an hour of the duality, and we're not going to do that. So we're going to sit here and we're going to look at the wall and we're going to count to 10 over and over. Mm-hmm. And in that time, that's when the processing happens. It's like phase one was going to the recorder, picking up the recorder, then listening to it and hearing, okay, wait, it's not, okay, I have a better picture on it. And I don't know everything.
And the better picture was you were able to hear that process, step back, outside your head.
Yeah, and so and it's still, you know, working out, but I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad I could say this out loud, because it's dissipating, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was already dissipating, but it's just good to say it out loud, otherwise I just have it in my head, you know, still. And
Yeah. So, he, you know, the voice is partially right. I do have motivations.
You do have what?
Motivations. I want you to end suffering.
Yeah.
So you can point that out to it next time it starts in with this stuff.
Well, the mentor was saying such good stuff, you know, at the same time, but it's so quiet sometimes, you know?
I know. You just wish it would just shout it out. Or And yet, how marvelous, this is kind of a parallel of what we were talking about the other night, but that you hear it, and that's where your attention is. Even though all this stuff is going on, you're listening to that quiet voice and doing what it's telling you to do.
Yeah. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Well, for anybody.
It is a miracle to be able to go, oh, this pull, like Jen was saying, the pull is so strong, and it's, I do the thing, I don't, like it says in the Bible, you know, I do the thing, that which I don't want to do, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And
all what I want to do, I don't.
That thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like you said the other night, it is almost like grace when the ability is there to be able to hear the teeny, teeny voice, mm-hmm. and so quiet.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that would be really helpful, I think, for everybody, all of us to get, all of us, okay? Anytime we're hearing voices that are freaking out, it's conditioning. It's ego. Because you notice that still small voice never freaks out.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't freak out.
Yeah. The mentor was recording out here in the street. It was saying, more will be revealed. Just stand still. You know, like just
keep
breathing. And it's so much conditioning to go toward the
oh my God thing, you know, and I've got to get out of here, you know, there's something wrong. And it's such a different orientation to recognize that, oh, wait, that's that freak out voice.
Yeah, that's what's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the something wrong. It's funny because when we step back, like we can all hear it with what you're describing, and you could too, but there's something wrong. There's something wrong. And there is, with the voice that's yelling, there's something wrong. So it's actually saying what it's doing.
Which is helpful, actually.
It's really helpful. Yeah, it's always projecting. It's always talking about itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of exposes itself then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not clever. It's not mm-hmm. clever and it's not subtle. We're just used to being fooled by it. Mm-hmm. And we live in a society that's fooled by it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. Why, when you have that intuition that you're in danger, then you really need to, well, at least buy another insurance policy. So the conditioning is just deep and thick to believe that fear-mongering voice and do whatever it tells you to do. Because mm-hmm. that's the way to stay safe.
That's about the biggest one, though, so far. So I'm very grateful because talking about it out loud makes it so much more visible now mm-hmm. to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody can know at some point that I'm the devil. often.
Yeah.
Right? Depending on where a person is in practice, I'm the devil. That's just what conditioning does. Because it's going to try to get rid of anything that's going to be on your side. And so I'm used to it. Yeah, yeah. I don't take it personally anymore. Much. I thought it was different with you, Carol.
That reminds me of Greg. You know, he used to say, my relationship with Sherry is mainly inside of my head, and she's really mean.
Well, the Sherry who is here when you're not here is really an awful person. But the Sherry who's here when you're here, yeah.
The reason I put my hands up was with the talk of fear, it reminded me of my most recent absolutely favorite Project Dread quote. I'm sure everybody has this experience where you'll have one, you go, oh wow, that's it. That's my favorite one of all time. And
mm-hmm. Okay, now. Fill the next one.
Which it was this weekend that came out, and I'm going to butcher it, but something along the lines of, the antidote to fear is self-acceptance. Does anybody remember? something like. Anyway,
is that ringing any bells?
I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
But it was just, it just took me aback. Maybe it was hatred. The antidote to something.
It was
so.
The antidote to something was something. And you know, you can just kind of fill in, depending on what's going on.
It's you know, so, it was so favorite. No, I think that's what it was. I'll have to go back and look. But it was one of those things where it just blew me away because I realized, I mean, now of course this is so obvious, but that when anybody's coming from fear, it's because they're identified, that conditioning has them, and that they can't get to self-acceptance, so the best thing I can do is offer acceptance.
Yes.
And it was just one of those, because normally what happens, somebody was talking about this in one of our groups on this retreat of getting identified, you know, wanting the other person to be different, so then we're just coming at them with our conditioning, and so you've got two conditionings mm-hmm. coming at each other rather than attempting to connect to their authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems so powerful. So
yes, and to me the what you're pointing at that's so helpful is that if we realize that what's going on with somebody else, Carol, this is for us, okay? that what's going on with somebody else doesn't have anything to do with you, then you know it's okay. Then you don't need to. I was kidding about that.
There's no reason to come at them with conditioning, because, as you say, that's whatever they're going through, mm-hmm. and there's nothing wrong with what they're mm-hmm. going through, and it's not a problem, and you don't need to take it on, and you don't need to try to fix or change them. They can just be where they are, and you can practice unconditional love and acceptance. Then you have a chance of two disidentified people instead of two heavily conditioned people.
Yeah. Well, it took me to the place of, that's really what's going on in the world, right? It's when we're identified with the devil, then
yeah,
it's the devil's world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so can we work to be a channel for life instead of a channel for conditioning? Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Rebecca?
Can I jump in about something I just saw?
Yeah.
So when you're just saying that about, I'm losing it. Hang on, let me see if it comes back. Oh, it was really... Oh, that conditioning is saying what it's actually doing. Mm-hmm. What I've been seeing is that, I've seen it many times, is that, Tuesday night, you said something, I think it was to Rob about, yeah, and its ultimate goal is to try to get you to quit. It'll just get you to quit. And the question popped into my head in that moment, well, I know I'm not going to quit. I wonder what it's going to try to get me to do. Because I just know I'll never quit practice. So that wouldn't work, but I knew it would do something. And I just saw that what it's going to try to get me to leave the monastery. And the way that it does that, what it does is that sort of oozing takeover is this is like fleeting here. It'll say there's this really isn't, I'm here now, but long term, who knows? And then they'll start painting this other life and other possibilities and all that. And what I just saw when you said that about it actually does what it's doing is, so every now and then, Ashwini in our conversations or text or whatever, she'll say, because this is what you chose to do. Because this is the life you've chosen to live. And every single time, and most recently it was on a radio show and I called in, I could feel ego go like that. Uh-huh. Like it literally cringes. Uh-huh. And it rears up like, I didn't choose this. Uh-huh. I didn't choose it the way you're thinking I chose this, uh-huh. And it's really kind of almost got that attitude about it too. Uh-huh. And, it's like that scene in The Matrix, when the guy with the glasses is kind of dissolving there. So it's kind of, it's like, it's that cringing kind of thing. Like, this is melting it. Every time she says something like that, it reacts and I see it.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, we're on a theme tonight, aren't we? This is that same place that Jen was looking at, Carol's looking at. That same place of it's happening right there, and it's being, you're in that place of awareness that can see both of those happening simultaneously.
Yes. And you can feel it in the mm-hmm. body. It's mm-hmm. just so... something, so kind of creepy and yet so interesting at the same time.
Well, so it's creepy, but kind of mean.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you can feel what it feels like when you're identified with it.
Oh, absolutely. And then I got on the recorder and said, okay, for the record, I am the happiest here I've ever been. I couldn't, I could just say all the things I'm so grateful for. I love it. I love my house. I love my this. I love the trees. I love the birds. I love, I mean, just go on and on like that. For the record. So that when those things come in, I'll have a for the record.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then so it's like I know there's a little opening there after in that moment that we're talking about our theme here. Because then what'll happen is that's when the other possibilities start sort of oozing in. Like, wouldn't it be? And then that.
Yeah. So it's not in there cringing. It's just a little
fantasy, yes. A little daydream, yes. A little... Yes. I mean, and what's the harm? You're the happiest you've ever been here. It's yes. not like you're going to quit,
exactly.
Right? It's not. So yeah. Why not just think about other possibilities?
And that's where what Carol just said was so helpful, because it's like the mentor is over there saying, you know what it's doing. You know it's trying to get you out of here. You know that. You know? And it's right there. You can say, yeah.
Could you speak up, mentor? Yeah. Get a little voice yeah. behind that.
Yeah. So anyway, it's really good to see all this come together.
Well, and I love it when, you know, we got to get a theme going and several people give their version of the same process.
Yes.
With different, slightly different content.
That is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I see Monica.
I have a question. Today in the evening sit, I was sitting in lotus or just cross-legged, which I don't always do, and I was having like extreme pain, and I was also determined that I wasn't going to move, and I kind of got hysterical. Like I started laughing really hard, not like laughing at the pain, but laughing like I'm a lunatic, you know, like I couldn't control it. And of course I was worried about disturbing other people around me, but it was just a very strange experience.
Were you making noise when you were laughing?
I don't know. Ask Anna. I was trying very hard not to. But I think my body was. And it was just it was just this bizarre. Well, I sometimes do laugh when I'm really upset, or, you know, I mean, I've had laughter in odd times, but it was just a weird experience. I was just really in pain. I was determined that I wasn't going to move, and I just couldn't contain this sort of hysteria around it, mm-hmm. and finally it kind of, I mean, I really had to suppress the laughter, and then finally it got to I made it through the sit, I'll say, and I wasn't hysterically laughing at the very end.
So hysterical is the word that keeps being associated with that laughter. Well, so it wasn't jolly laughter.
No, I mean, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't. I don't think it was jolly.
Yeah, I got there.
I don't know. I just wanted to ask about it because it was kind of weird.
Uh-huh. So it is familiar to you, though, that you will laugh where other people might have different kinds of expressions of emotion.
Yeah, I think
somebody else might cry, or somebody else might
be sad.
Uh-huh. And you laugh.
Yeah, it's just an inappropriate expression, but it's like well, intensity. I think now that you're saying that, it's like this intensity that is so overwhelming.
And it you got to get it out.
Yeah, like something like that. And I don't know why I just was so determined that I wasn't.
Well, that's the one I would wonder about.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm not going to do it because it was, I think it's kind of a little bit made me think about it as this place. It's like there's often that time where there's a promise of something if I do a certain thing, but it always ends up in hell, you know? So it was just mm-hmm. that, I don't know, I just wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't going to die if I sat there. Like nothing bad was going to happen, even though it was really uncomfortable. I just wanted to sit it out.
But what I hear in that is that you're not sure who the players are.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so there's... I think she might be here! So there's somebody who's in pain, and then there's a decision not to move,
there are these other kinds of explanations that, you know, I just want to prove to myself that I'm not going to die or that sort of thing. But it has a little element of
sadistic.
I was going to go for insensitivity, but sadistic insensitivity. That it kind of has a feel of somebody doing something to someone, you know, putting them in a position, making them stay there, kind of a punishing, yeah. But under the guise of somehow this will make you a better person, or it's character building, or.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an unfamiliar frame of reference for me, but the other thing that I'm thinking about is, like, when I quit smoking, like, decades ago, there's this feeling like it's intolerable, but then there's something on the other side, right? So that there's freedom on the other side of that feeling of something intolerable. So it was more like that. It wasn't, I don't think I was punishing so much of just wanting to know what's on the other side of extreme discomfort, because a lot of times, well, I heard you say in sitting, we're practicing coming back to center, and we're practicing wandering and coming back, and I forget where I was going with that.
Well, here would be my best encouragement, because I bet this kind of thing will happen again, to just see if everybody's on board. So one of the ways to check in is it okay to move? Because if you can't, there's no freedom in that.
Right.
And then to see if everybody's on board. Because the person who's experiencing the pain is not the person who's saying, sit there. Mm-hmm. So it can have that little flavor of, you know, we talk about it with you know, the voice in your head, especially the punishing or self-hating voice in your head, is fine with you going through anything. It doesn't have a body. It doesn't have, you know, it doesn't have anything that the human being is struggling with. And so just to check in that the person who's going to be sitting there and the body is not sort of paying a price for somebody's idea about going through pain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I am in a position of whatever the position is, and I think it would be really amazing for you to go through this extreme amount of pain just to have the experience. You know, they kind of laws against that sort of thing. So we want to make sure that that's not going on, even though it's a shared body.
Right.
My main point is, can it be all right not? Because in my experience, life is happy to provide for us experience of extreme pain or extreme discomfort or those kinds of things. You know, most of us get a chance to have plenty of that. And so to know that you're all right with that might be helpful to take a little softer approach. You know, sort of build up to it and practice with it in a way that brings kindness to the equation.
Yeah.
Because that laughter could have a kind of a little kid tone to it. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody who's trapped in a situation that they don't know what to do with or can't get out of or have no control. So, bottom line, lots to explore there, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you. Ashwini, did I see your hands?
You did. So I had an interesting experience of grace in the kitchen this morning. I was cutting some zucchini, and I was repeating the mantra while I was cutting the zucchini to see how present I was to cutting the zucchini. And I watched how often I wasn't there, how often I could not keep the thread of the attention on an expanded awareness that included the mantra and cutting zucchini. Mm-hmm. And it dropped in what a fabulous practice it is to just do that.
Just practice that.
Just practice that. I'm cutting zucchini. I have the whole kitchen in my awareness. And I'm trying to keep coming back to the mantra. So every time I wandered off, I come back. And it gave me a clue to how to work with the place that we've mentioned a couple of times in group today, where I'm in the thick of the identification. The story is just, it's not pausing for a moment, right? And it seems to me, the theme of the context of the workshop is surrendering to how things are, but surrendering it in grace, not in resignation. Mm-hmm. So it seems like life, in its wisdom, is demanding grace. Because I have lots of experience in surrendering the story ungracefully.
Right. This is kind of what Jen was pointing at, right? The gutting it out surviving it.
Well, and even going to, okay, this is yours, life, take this. But it's still the residue of the energy is still, I don't feel joy. It's not joyful. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be surrendering it, but I'm surrendering it because I don't have any other choice. Uh-huh. It doesn't feel like I've gotten to that place where I'm surrendering it because I want to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's being pulled out of my clutching, clinging fingers. There's nothing.
Yeah, that edge where whatever's pulling me out, I'm ready to dig out. Mm-hmm. Right? That kind of razor's edge of the karma is burning and it doesn't want to burn, and there's no room for anything else other than being cooked. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I got to was, the what dropped in is, there's still interest in the story.
You're really not finished with that piece of karma yet.
Yes, and so the zucchini cutting was a tremendous practice, because all I have to do at that point is to switch to the mantra. Because I think it was somewhere in group, in this retreat, there is no joy in the content. The content is grim. The content is serious. The content has no room to give me anything. And the process doesn't seem to either. Right? Yeah. And so to look, and nice. That was that place of the interest in the process, and the content hasn't yet, there's still that energy going to, how can it be different, how can I surrender, how can I change it, how can I not feel this way, whatever the energy is. And it was such a moment of grace to realize I just do with that as I was with the zucchini, which is to just go to, I choose unconditional love, or make me an instrument of your peace, and keep repeating that. Because that's the only way to let the karma burn. To let the karma burn. Because any other movement puts me right back in that place of deep identification. Or teetering between the two. That doesn't feel like I'm doing anything but feeding the karma.
Okay, so this is number four with the same process,
yes.
Right? So you're watching both sides of it, right there in the middle of it, knowing what's going on, not able to make a different choice about it, because the karma still has enough strength and power that really all you can do is just try to stay there on that razor's edge.
Right.
Right? Because you can't yet choose your heart, because there's still the draw to the karma, and yet you don't want to go with the karma because you're too aware of your heart. And so this is that perfect awareness practice place.
Right. And the only place that seems to work is to come back to the mantra.
Yes.
Right? Because I can keep my attention there as it wears off, keep my attention there as it wears off. And in doing that, what I realize is I'm not feeding the energy of the story. Mm-hmm. That there is no interest in it, there is no attempt to overcome it, there's no attempt to fix the situation. I'm just, that's all I can do.
Mm-hmm. Trying to stay here so life can build the energy on this side of it.
Yes.
This is the choice you're going with.
Yes, and I think that having done that for 48 hours now, what is available is that place of I can feel the lack of interest. It's almost as if the circuit is physically breaking because there is not enough energy that's being fed to it that it's blossoming, mm-hmm. right? It's like starving the oxygen. Mm-hmm. But if for any moment I give it attention in any way,
whoosh! It's like freeze-dried coffee.
It truly is. I mean, it's just, I have never understood more than in the last 48 hours the power of attention.
What you're saying that is good for all of us to take in and keep in mind is that it is a split second. So you're right there on that razor's edge, and you only have to lose focus for a second.
Yes.
And the karma is right there. So, you know, it's not that that's a problem, because that's just how it is. But realizing that's how it is can inspire us, because it takes so much attention on this side. You know, the letting go side is so undernourished.
Yes.
As compared to the karmic side. Right? And that's just, it's just huge and powerful. And so here we are, you know, attempting to give more attention to this here now, to the heart, to the choice for life, unconditional love, however we want to talk about it. And just to know that it takes nothing to feed the karma. That's just automatic. But it really does take our willingness and commitment in order to feed the direction of the heart. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. You're a very fun group. Were you going to say something?
I just had a really quick question that brought up. Mm-hmm. In sitting this retreat, I've been doing this thing where I'm counting and then I'm counting sets of my counting to 10. And I'm finding
Ram Dass was a high Western achiever. You're a high Western achiever. Yeah.
Okay, well, I find it easier for me to stay focused. I'm not getting taken away. Mm-hmm. And then I'm wondering, am I cheating? Because I'm not playing a game, in a sense.
Yeah, well, yes.
And yes, I can also, I know when it's going to be 30 minutes because I know about where I get to.
Yeah, how many sets it takes to get to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, people will say things to me. City people. I feel that I'm attached to meditation. And so since attachment is a problem, do you think I should quit meditating?
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I say to them, how about if you let everything else go? Mm-hmm. And then right before you're getting ready to zoom off to wherever, you can ditch meditation. Right? And so in that way, you know, to use it until you don't need to.
Okay.
Yeah. Because to let go something that enables you to stay that present during sitting, because it might be something conditioning would call a game, I'd risk it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.